that's my natural instinct. So I'm constantly looking like for like, where are the changes, what are the differences, mm-hmm. and it just takes significantly more time when it's presented to me differently every single year, and that's very frustrating for the time I need to spend, and I still don't know what telling the story means.
So in the narrative statement, so the front section of the statement of accounts, it's all about telling, like I said, telling the story. it's showing the picture of the whole authority, what's happened from the start of the year to where we are in the financial statements. That's what it means.
So in some way, Chair, if there's anything you can do to assist us with that in your role as Chair, I would be very grateful.
I think what we can do is raise it with the new auditors when...
It's a fair point. Yeah. We're struggling to understand technical terms we don't come across every day, and so we struggle every time.
As an ex-auditor in the Big Four, I think what it's about is sort of marketing. So I think the Big Four, or actually below that, Mazars probably as well, when we get to see them, will like to refresh their diagrams to show that they're constantly updating and revising their audit approach and refining it and making it more attractive. So therefore, we couldn't possibly have the same diagrams as last year.
Hopefully, we can drive a process to request.
We can. It's a fair. I understand. I precisely understand your point. I think it's. I think it's maybe not necessarily fortunate we're losing KPMG next year, but Sunning hasn't got to go back and wrestle with KPMG's national marketing department.
I'll leave it to the chair.
The chair may well.
I have two other points, Chair. Yes. If I can just get through them, if that's okay. I am intrigued by how we're going to do value for money arrangements against the medium-term financial strategy. I just need that explained to me, because I'm trying to work out what that value for money is against. Is that a value for money assessment against us being able to sustain ourselves against our minimum statutory requirement? Is it against our corporate plan requirements? Is it against... I'm struggling to understand what that term value for money will mean against what, in the way I read that, because I'm not clear what it's against, because we might be incredibly resilient and be really strong sensitivity wise against the bare minimum statutory requirements we've got to deliver, but we might be a long way from that against what we're trying to deliver. Mm-hmm. So I'm just seeking clarification around what that's going to be in terms of a VFM against the MTFF, in terms of that process.
Okay, we've come to page 16.
I'm on 16, yeah.
16. So the way we look at hopefully for this authority, we look at it from a management perspective. We want to look at it from your corporate priorities. So, in terms of this risk around the medium term financial planning, we want to see is, are you going to manage your budget? Or is the manage, are you going to, is the outturn in line with your budget? What about your saving targets? Are you actually going to meet them or not? Does your medium term financial plan kind of consider what we look at the assumptions behind it? Is the income appropriate? Is the appropriate? So it's kind of looking in that perspective.
Okay, I kind of get that, but I still struggle because there has to be an against what, and I want to see there is another sentence that says what that is termed against, because I, as I made the point, we could be incredibly resilient mm-hmm. against our minimum statutory requirements and the processes we put in place to meet our minimum statutory mm-hmm. requirements, and we might be really strong. We might only need to spend £10 million for that, but we've actually got a budget of £60 million and or £70 million this year, and we're going to spend, we are nothing like as resilient in our MTF process mm-hmm. and numbers against that, what we're trying to deliver. So for me, my problem is what's the baseline that value for money is being measured against?
Well, so the baseline, it depend on what the authority's baseline is. So if, for example, your budget says, your revenue provision, I mean, going back to your revenue reserves, if you said our revenue reserves 10% of the whole budget, then we'll check it is above 10%.
and it's not going to go below that.
That's not.
That's just the management of our numbers, though, which we can do. And we do. I sense we're not quite there. I just sense that this isn't clear to me. I understand we want to make sure we are tough, resilient, strong, all the words in there against, and our MTFS is on the button. But the VFM aspect of this has to be against something. It can't just be against the document, because the document is strong, because the document's the document. So I need to understand, is it against the document compared to the corporate plan, the document compared to our minimum statutory requirements? I am unsure how that process is going to give me an answer that I'm going to understand against something.
Okay. Could I come back to you?
Yes, yeah, I understand it. I'm happy that you come back on that.
Okay.
But it's not something I'm clear about in that regard.
Okay.
As to how that's going to work.
You're going to respond separately on this.
Could
you copy it?
Yeah,
please.
My last point, if I can do my last question, question is then just the business rate. We were in the process of bidding or trying to run the pilots for the business rates.
We were.
Were. Is that gone now?
Yeah, it was. Apologies for not communicating. We were unsuccessful, so Leicestershire was unsuccessful. So it was announced in the December autumn statement that there was a list of those.
Okay, it's not your fault. My fault for not being up to date.
We were unsuccessful. Yes, I'm afraid.
The point is that the business rate issue. We as an audit committee probably just need to be aware that the business rate issue will become more important to us as time progresses, if business rate becomes our source of revenue. If government allows us to keep and retain all of our business rate, it will rise up our agenda. So I'm sort of keeping a beady eye on the fact that business rate, we have to allocate so much because nationally so much of it isn't getting paid, there's appeals, etc. That's going to rise up for us as an issue, because businesses are going to understand that we are dependent on that as our revenue stream if we become able to keep 100% of our business rate. So I'm not concerned with it at the moment, I'm just flagging it that issue will rise up our agenda as being important if we become a council who rely on business rate retention 100%. And then we're having to allocate more because businesses say, well, you need our money and we're going to be, you can't put us up so much. And that whole relationship between us and business, and the business rate and business rate retention, just becomes a higher risk to us when that becomes our revenue source if we're retaining 100% business rate.
Yeah, it's just, Jackson, I was going to make a couple of comments. One is, it's likely to be a 75% business rate scheme, whatever that means, from 2020-21 would be, I guess, the way things stand. The moment is probably the most important thing I would say to remember is that the actual rates are set nationally, so we haven't really got much in the way of control over the actual business rates that are applied to businesses. So we've got some discretion around hardship reliefs and some ability to offer some discretion reliefs to some businesses, but generally the rates are set nationally and then it is up to us to collect them. At the moment we are incentivised to try and grow our business rates to make the borough business friendly, which again we can do to some extent, potentially around planning decisions that we make. We've also got the enterprise zone within Charm, which is a way of encouraging or attracting businesses to Charm, but actually it's fairly limited. But you know, you're absolutely correct, business rates will be more important. We'll never be allowed to retain 75% of what we collect, because that'll be way, way in excess of what the government would deem they would. If we are allowed to keep 75% of our business rates, I will be adding Lamborghinis and Ferraris to our yet to be developed car scheme.
Can we just have a bit of coffee?
So it is very complicated. The business rates appeal is a genuine degree of difficulty, and I personally think it's outrageous the government was able to introduce a scheme but give us the risk management and responsibility for the settlement of appeals going back 5 to 10 years. So I did personally think that was reasonably outrageous, but that's the set of rules.
In which I just really wanted to flag it.
The point is well made.
Years to come, and just following this through now.
The point is well made, and the other thing is that you may have picked up is the valuation office, whom we rely on for the valuations and also the settlement for appeals, is quite well understaffed, and you may have picked up in the trade press that they made an error with our original settlement figures, so that's why there's been some correction to the budget going forwards, because the valuation numbers they used the government sent out to us weren't actually correct. And in fairness, I suppose, the valuation office, their responsibility is that they're increasingly important to us so that we can manage our numbers. Their staff numbers are somewhat reduced. The Leicester office is closed, so we haven't got a local valuation office now, and it is just a fact of life and something we have to manage going forward.
I take it from what you're saying that we get less back than we pay into the national pool, is that correct?
Yes. So we collect in Charnwood, we're on a 50% business rate regime at the moment. So assuming we were to collect the precise amount of rates the government thinks we would, we collect 45 million of that. 22.5 million go straight to the government. Then there's another 10%. So another 10%. So go 4.5 million would go to the county council and the fire authority. So they take 10%. We take 4 million roughly out of that at the moment. So our share of that is 4 million, and then we pay what's called a tariff of the balancing amount, which is about the 6 or 7 million, I think, to central government as well. So out of the 45 million we collect, we retain about 4 million. About a similar amount goes to the 4.5 million would go to the county and the fire authority, and the remainder goes to central government. So on a 50% rate retention scheme, which we have at the moment, we collect 45 million. So you might think 50% of that might be 22.5-23 million. In fact, it turns out to be 4 million based on the rules of the scheme that we operate under. So if we were able to collect 75 million, so you can imagine if we were to get 3/4 of 45 million, so we'd collect 30 to 35 million rather than 4 million, you can see that would be a real bonus for the a real bonus for the council's finances.
So it's watch this space.
Yes, and the key thing actually for us in terms of risk, which I will highlight, is the fair funding review. So the government at the moment concludes that we need that our fair share, if you like, of that business rate resource is 4 million, but the government's doing a fair funding assessment, which will maybe revisit whether we would be getting 4 million or 3 million or 5 million. So there are likely to be winners and losers. I think my guesses are that generally districts will be losers, which will be bad news. When you look at the spending power of districts within Leicestershire, we're tending to be below average if you look at spending power per head of population, other than Melton, actually. So, but the remaining six districts in Leicestershire appear to be relatively underfunded. So, but how this will go, and of course, all different sectors of local government are lobbying very hard to increase their share. So, you've got the counties, the metropolitan, the unitaries, London boroughs versus the Northern Met. So. It's a large bun fight is in prospect.
I am listening to all these things, and I have read this document once or twice. I have to say, actually, there's a lot of stuff I don't understand. Can I ask you, in plain terms, what has gone well? And what has not gone that well? A very, very brief little summary for a layperson or from out of the state.
Okay, so number one, we are not Northamptonshire. That's slightly facetious, but that's, we are still here, we are still solvent, we've got a solid financial position. So Northamptonshire, in layman's terms, is bankrupt.
Uh-huh.
So we're not bankrupt. We are well financed, so our reserves position is good. So You know, the council is in a stable position. What's gone less well are relatively minor in that context, but you know, we have got an issue in terms of our outturns against what we budget, both on the capital and the revenue side. So that is an issue that we are looking at. That's something we will be discussing, no doubt will come through in our peer challenge, which I don't know whether you've heard about the peer challenge. Yep. But that's something that will no doubt get discussed and picked up there. But so that's less good. The big risks we face are around, in my view, the fair funding review. So the whole, there's two elements. In the big picture, there will be two elements from my point of view. So one is, what share how much public sector money will there be in totality? So how much is the government going to spend in total, and how much will be available? And then what share of that pie will be for local government? And then of that slice of pie, what bit of that will come to us? And so the big risk is both the totality of public sector funding and the availability of it, and how that will flow through into what we're likely to receive. So that's that's a risk. And you know, are we doing anything about that? Well, we're clearly thinking about it. So the investment in property funds is one of our responses to that. So we're taking a little bit more risk on, hopefully a prudent and sensible approach. But that's going to be, by taking on the property funds, that will generate, you know, £150,000 extra every year. So that's part of our responses. Yeah. We have to look at other stuff as well. But
You see, that was a fantastic explanation. I really love this summary, because I understand where we are now. Is there anything else we can do to make sure actually that more funding will come towards us from the central government? Is there anything we can do? It is not necessary to answer now.
We can try and fight our corner politically. So that's a combination of, do we have influential MPs, which may depend on which political parties in power. Can we make the case in various ways by lobbying various people? So we can try and influence what's going on. There's the local government association, which has got a slight challenge at the moment because it represents all sectors within the local government, obviously. So, you know, obviously us and the county, we would like, within Leicestershire, the county would obviously like a larger share of the pie than we would get at the moment. There's the district councils networks, which is a body set up to lobby for the interests of district councils. So there are ways we can do this, but at the end of the day, it's sort of political, and things will happen. Things can happen. So the Grenfell fire happens, and all of a sudden, we've all got to find the money for any cladding or issues that we've got to deal with like that. So the government concludes we've got reserves. Fortunately, in Charnwood, we haven't got high-rise building with cladding, but if we had, that would be, we need to find some money. We've got the business rates is a nice example. So we've actually, so this is a advert for councillors. I think Mike Roberts might be sending you something. So if you speak to businesses who feel their business rates have gone up quite a lot, we've got £80,000 left in our hardship fund. So we're inviting applicators to that. But that all came about from a political reaction in April, following the revaluation in March, when a lot of businesses didn't like it, so the government announces suddenly fines £300 million, which we then got to protest and deal with. So these are all this is not a complaint, by the way. This is just the sort of environment that we live in.
Councillor Parson, to be marginally political for 2 seconds. That part of your answer is about a political direction of travel now. My observation, which I've said publicly elsewhere, is that we've spent a number of years rebuilding a decent car on the drive, and we polished it up, buffed it up, got the engine running again, made it good, made it work, got some reserves. We've rebuilt quite a nice car on the drive now, and now we've got to choose what direction of travel we're going in a difficult headwind, and that's now the choice of us politically as councillors to direct the council in a direction of travel now, and that's our responsibility. to now find that direction of travel. We're in not bad shape, and that's taken a number of years to get to that point. But budgets are very difficult now. I've tried to learn my way around budget scrutiny for the last two and a bit years, and we are spending money. We are spending more than we're getting in. We're running a deficit for a number of years now, a decreasing deficit to get back in and to keep services. But now it's about the direction of travel. We need to decide where we're going to go, and that's a big decision for us.
And may I ask, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Daniel, you're very much involved in the local government association, as far as I remember.
Not anymore.
I'm sorry. So we need to find somebody who can help with this side. Thank you very much.
Okay. Does anybody else have any comments, questions? I think we can note this report as well, can't we? I wonder what the format of the next external plan for the new external audit
will be. We
come back to the chair. That's fine.
I will be curious actually if the diagram's spooky enough is identical next year with different auditors. That will be a question of copying, I think.
Right, we'll move on then to the internal audit plan, item 9. This is your programme of work.
Shirley Lomas speaking. This is the draft audit plan for next year, to start from April through to the following March. The plan's been, the proposed plan is at Appendix A, so it's page 5 onwards. So the plan's been drafted based on first year risk assessment of the areas within the council to be subject to, or that could be subject to audit, and also consultation with the senior management team and corporate management team. And members of the council's cabinet and audit committee are also invited to put forward proposals for the areas to be considered. On Appendix A, each audit assignment that we've included has been aligned to the strategic and corporate risk registers as appropriate. At the top of the appendix, the key financial systems on page 5, they're in there based on being the second year of the current three-year period, which takes up to 2020. So during the three-year period, all of the audits will be subject to one full audit with interim audits in the intervening years. And the remainder of the audits are the following. The audits below that on pages 7, 8 and 9 are the service audits, which have been produced through the risk assessment and discussions with CMC and SMT and members. The resources for the IT audit have not yet been procured. We've currently got someone in from Central Midlands Audit Partnership who is doing an exercise to identify the council's IT risks throughout the council. And we'll be producing a IT risk register, which will then inform the resources we need to do the IT audit, and we'll procure the resources at that point.
And this is what we'll be reporting back to during the year,
yes,
in terms of progress again. Is there a contingency built in?
There's a 30-day contingency.
Right.
And a small amount of time to finish off this year's audits that aren't complete by the end of the year.
I think we all had an opportunity to have an input into this at the planning stage too, didn't we?
Yes, dear.
Yeah. We were having trouble getting the town hall up to speed. We need to be looking at that.
We had an issue with it a couple of years ago. We
the tills?
Yeah. There was a till thing, yeah.
There weren't proper tills. The whole thing was a mess, the modelling.
When we did the follow-up audit, it was a lot improved, yeah. So we haven't got anything in this year to look at the moment. But the tills are very not.
Yeah, I think there's new tills. There's also, to be fair, I think changing managers, newish town hall manager, and I think that aspect of operations is improved, I think it's probably fair.
Well, you just need to cross my ear and make it clear
we're
still
Well, we have got some. We're not aware of any issues over there at the moment.
Various levels of staff, various changes, not terribly good equipment. And it's the one thing, we've got a lot of cash and booze and that sort of thing. Which is open to getting on if you don't keep an eye on it.
Sorry, Richard Huddleston here. It's just for clarification. On page 6, the column that says previous audit and assurance level, a lot of that's blank, whereas in other areas it says types of assurance.
It's at the bottom of the previous page for that whole block, because they're all last year's audits. We're in the process of doing
that,
them.
That substantial assurance follows all the way through.
That's because we have the 17-18 audits for those, and we're still in progress, so they'll be reported to the next committee.
And Steffi, we're happy with that?
Yeah.
We shall watch this space and we'll see the reports as they come back in due course. And to take it as a case in point, the next one is the internal
quarterly update report on the current year plan, which is obviously drawing to a close in the next few weeks. Progress against the current plan is Appendix A. There's one further audit that we're proposing to defer to next year's IT audit plan on business continuity. The scope of that audit was to review the outcomes of the business continuity test, and that will now not be done until July, as I understand. That the test itself won't be being done until July, so we can't audit until after that test has been made. So that will be moved forward but put into the IT audit plan.
Is this a convenient point to start a question? In the minutes for this meeting, the IT audit was meant to come to this meeting. In the minutes that we've looked at today, the IT is dated 20th of February. Is this all interlinked as to why it's not here today in front of us? So when I look at the minutes, we agreed in the minutes that the IT audit would be in front of us on the 20th of February on page 4 of the minutes. Annual IT health check, COVID connection, confidential report, 20th of February, annual.
So that's a different thing.
That's not the same issue we're talking about now.
No, it's different.
And that's not here, though.
No, it's not. I was told that was the case, and I agreed to it being deferred.
And that's because, just to let all the committee know, that the IT manager informed me that they're still waiting for information from the public sector network in regards to the report that they're going to produce for the committee. So they don't have the information they need to be able to do the report to present to you. And it is due to a delay with the public sector network. It's a delay their end and not our end. We've given them, my understanding is we've given them all the information, you know, and they're in the process of processing it to give their findings back to us.
They are another part of the government that are under-resourced, actually.
That health check is undertaken by an external company.
Yeah, they come in and do that, I remember that.
Pretty much, isn't it? When they
I think this year
we've
got the challenge of making sure it's understandable. I think like a year or so ago, which wasn't actually very so we need to make sure we can work on that this time.
So yes, this is the IT audit plan that we do it to different IT work. Section 2, final audit reports that have been issued since the last committee meeting are listed in Section 2. So we've got 4 reports, 2 substantial, 2 moderate. And the further details of all of those are in Appendix B. IT audits, there have been no final reports issued since the last update report to the committee. The environmental services audit. You may remember last time we said we'd provide an update report to the committee at this meeting following the reporting at the last meeting of potential overspend. So Matt Bradford, head of Clendon, has come along to provide an update. to you as to how we've arrived at the final figure.
Well, we've arrived at a position where no, turns out we've underpaid them rather than overpaid them, so I think we'd be quite interested to see what the explanations are.
Certainly, there are various mechanisms in which the contract price changes within the contract structure, called variations, and they are through indexation, additional properties that we collect waste from, so that's for residual waste and recycling. Those services are provided to all properties. Additional subscribers to our garden waste service. Additional roads for street cleansing. Variations for the service. Changing and minor amendments and providing services to third parties. Since the last audit committee, the work we've completed is we've reconciled all the payments against the contract price for all of the years since the contract started. We've reconciled all end-of-year adjustments that are made for additional properties and other variations. And we've recognised any variations or payments that are made year on year, so the combined of the two there. Throughout the work, we found that there were overpayments and underpayments relating to variations, mainly linked to additional properties and the number of subscribers to our garden waste service. So there were differences in year on year. The net value of that is an underpayment of 76k anticipated up to the end of this financial year. As I say, those under and overpayments have been netted off. Discussions regarding the repayment of the underpayment to the contractor are to commence shortly. Those haven't been undertaken yet, and going forward we put additional checks and sign-off procedures in place to make sure that these variations are calculated correctly going forward.
Yeah, because what we're looking for effectively is a turnaround of nearly 400,000, aren't we?
It is, yeah.
And potential overpayment of 300,000.
I think I did say verbally at the last meeting.
You have brought it down.
We felt at the time that we had probably overpaid them 50,000. That overpayment was there, but when we did our thorough checking back through every year of the contract, we found that there were other errors in the way that those variations were calculated that changed that figure. The initial 300k that we reported assumed a figure relating to garden waste subscribers that was incorrectly calculated had been carried forward year on year and therefore multiplied. That in fact hadn't happened, so that was just an in-year error that hadn't been carried forward into future years.
Right. Is the inference from this then that the contractor isn't checking the payments that they're entitled to under the contract?
We calculate the payments and write to them every year and tell them that in accordance with the contract, the indexation, the additional properties and everything else, what we I've calculated that price to be. Those haven't proved to be correct on a number of occasions, so I'm not sure what checking they're doing their end, but I don't know. It's a question that we could ask them.
I think we ought to ask them.
Yeah,
because that produces some checks and balances within it. If you're providing them with information,
yeah,
they should have something to verify it against.
So we do write to them every year and break down how the contract price is made up year on year.
What exactly is the profile of this 76,000? Does it relate to 1 year or is it over a period of years?
It's over a period of years, going back to 2013-14, I think the earliest one is. So there's various sort of under and over payments from 13-14 up to the current year.
Can you let us have the profile of these payments?
Certainly.
So could we have the annual value of the contract as well?
The annual value for the contract is around £5 million. So, we've calculated this underpayment of 76k since the start of the contract. The contract value, in effect, that we've paid since the start is about £31.8 million. So it represents about 0.18% of the total contract price. So proportionately, it's quite small, but 76,000 is a lot of money. And we have to recognise that.
Just again, observations. I guess for me, again, it's just the turnaround. I recognise from what you said at the last meeting, you know, 300,000 to 76,000 is circa 400,000 turnaround in terms of just the scale, but recognising what you said at the previous meeting. I guess we are starting to try to address the major contracts because we've reorganised Cabinet to now have somebody whose responsibility I think is the major external contracts. So one's got to hope that that's going to increase the overview, scrutiny directly on those contracts. I hope in some way we in the scrutiny role can reflect that. I think we've got a role to play that we've got to get right in being able to scrutinise those contracts better. I'm not sure we're there yet in any way, shape or form. We've got to work much harder. But I think there was a recognition just generally with the major contracts since the Cabinet reorganisation in order of being able to look at those contracts. Are we now, and I know the answer you're going to say is yes, but to some extent, are we now much more confident that the processes are in place in terms of getting it right at the time? I know these things are difficult. I don't build to the same level as you, but I have issues with companies that self-bill me 6-7 figure contracts, and I have to plough through to see whether their self-billing matches my assessment of where we are. And and we have battles about it, and we have to spend a lot of time going to and fro to get the final figure agreed by all parties to get that right. And it's a time-consuming process, even at my size of organisation, let alone the council size. And so it's just we're confident we've got that resource right now. And going forward, I'm hoping more broadly in the other contracts we're doing the same. But in this particular contract, we're on it now.
Absolutely, we've put extra measures in place to make sure that we've got more people looking at this to sort of identify any calculation errors before we calculate the next year's contract price. So we have put extra procedures in place to address that, and I'm sure that won't happen. Going forward, this is a particularly complicated contract in the way that the variations work. It's certainly the most complicated four major contracts that I manage. So we have put extra resources.
When does it end?
The contract ends June 2020. But we have got extension provisions within the contract that we could exercise if we wanted to.
An opportunity to simplify?
There are opportunities to simplify, and it's one of the things that I have discussed with Shirley. However, there does need to be recognition of the growing number of properties within the borough and the extra street lengths that we get. There would have to be some mechanism to address that going forward, but we could look to simplify it at some point, particularly if we extended, we could ask for a simplified payment arrangement.
Because as recollection serves me, again, the reason why these things, they're all important because it's public money, but also for the budget, as memory serves me, the brown bin scheme is now one of our most significant revenue strands.
It is
income for this council,
yeah.
And hence getting that right and getting that money in, so to speak, is now a key plank of, you know, it's a good chunk of revenue that we get from that process.
Absolutely. The part of this that was audited as part of this particular audit was the number of properties that subscribe and the amount of money that we pay.
Hence the stickers now.
To Zirko, the
process going forward.
Above the original baseline. We are having an in-depth audit on garden waste service next year. It's in the audit plan. We've put a number of things in place. I feel that's on a much more sound footing than it was a couple of years ago. So Yes, it's quite a major.
How long has the sticker scheme been in operation? Will this April be the first year of replacements?
No, we're replacing now because of the way that we bill people for garden waste. We don't do a lot of councils. The subscription starts on the 1st of April and ends on the 31st of March.
Two different on my to April and June or something.
Regardless of where you join, you always pay to the 31st of March and resubscribe. We have an anniversary renewal, so someone joins in October, they get till the next October. But essentially what we had to do is issue retrospectively stickers to everyone on the garden waste subscription scheme. Which we did over a period of a couple of months, and then every time someone renews, and we're getting renewals through at the moment, they get a new sticker with a new date on. So that is, and we are rejecting bins for non-display of stickers. We think that's because the majority of those people are paying. We suspect. From the bins being presented at the moment, given the time of year, we're probably not getting a massive amount of garden bins presented, but we're getting probably about 300 a fortnight from that at the moment. I would expect that to rise. Subscriber numbers are still going up.
Okay.
Yes. Just a question about this potential additional payment of 76,000. Saw some figures last week, which I think were the council's budgets to the end of December, with a forecast to year end. Is this 76,000 in that or not? Because, as I recall, the forecast at year end was getting a bit tight.
Is it in that?
If this
I'm
isn't
not
in
sure
there,
this is in that latest forecast.
So that makes it even tighter and potentially makes the requests for carry forwards.
Yeah, there's been some. I've seen numbers to the end of January,
right.
So the underspend had increased between December and January, spookily enough, in line with every year for the last several. But some of the explanations of the underspends in December apply to the same accounts in January, so it will be. My instinct tells me that we will underspend at the year end. Based on previous form.
Even with this?
Yeah.
Okay. And there are conversations that we could have with the contractor about how, when this amount is repaid, basically.
Can't say that with the auditors.
There's the cash flow is one thing, and then there's the accruing for it and treating the accounts is another thing.
Okay, anyone else, any questions?
I could ask about the S106 money. I was intrigued about it. I quote, it says, documentation is disjointed, you just locate. Now, I did a bit of investigation myself to try and see if I could find the 106, and Shirley knows this, and I did find what looked like a splendid document listing all the 106 monies, but when they've been paid, but sadly, it's last. Got up to date in May 2017.
I have a reason for that for you now. It will be updated at the end of this month. Channing have said that it only gets updated when new Section 106 monies do come in, so it won't necessarily change every month.
So, we're looking at it as we go down now, we're saying there's no fresh 106 commitments since then?
No, there is. But there have been resource issues within planning, so it hasn't been updated until recently. So, it will be open. An up-to-date one will be published next week at the end of February.
Thank you.
We brought in additional resources to specifically get it updated.
The other one is looking at your report, where there's various things you find aren't tying up very well. But my big concern is you're reasonably happy about the recording and distribution of the contributions received. But I don't think that... Are you picking up what we're expecting to get? Or are you just, when the money comes in, saying, that's lovely, we'll follow this through?
No, we're not going to advise on this. We both go to, there's a Section 106 working group that meets every quarter, which we have a spreadsheet, an up-to-date spreadsheet that's produced for each meeting. of all of the monies that we've, the council has had to hit, adding up to date.
Oh, no, my question is, do you know what you should be getting in?
Yes, can we monitor the trigger points? So, depending on what the trigger point is in the agreement, they can vary. So, it may be on the 100th occupation, something like that. It's usually on occupation levels or times.
No, I've understood that. My concern was that challenging, smashing job, looking at the money when we've got it. But have we got all the money we should have?
We look at, there's an internal process, and we look at horizon scanning in each settlement, on settlement by settlement basis. So it looks at sort of predicting when the money will come in, when those trigger points are reached. So we are sort of keeping an eye on what we're expecting even before those trigger points have been met. Obviously, developers develop at different rates, and we're expected to hit the trigger point at one time, and it doesn't happen for a particular reason, or some come early. But we are sort of looking forward to what we're expecting to get.
Yeah, it's interesting to find there's this group, because I didn't know there was. Mm-hmm. And I'm very pleased and relieved to hear it.
Yeah. And we also monitor the expiry dates as well to make sure that there are plans in place before the expiry dates.
It's in my ward, I'd like detail on them. I'll discuss another time. The other thing I noticed, you were talking about changes to parish boundaries. Now, we've proposed an awful lot of that, which was the last two council meeting. Does that affect this at all?
No, this audit was done because there had been a case identified where on one of the developments on the edge of Loughborough, that's a few of the properties, even though the access is a bit complicated, the access road to the properties is actually in Loughborough, but the properties themselves are in Woodhouse. So it all goes around. So it's a matter of assessing where they actually are. So
I thought all those awkward ones presented to the council last week, or is this another one we didn't look at?
I think it's a similar circumstance, but a different case, because obviously the council discussion was about Primrose Hill between Mount Sorrel.
There were about another half dozen. That was the one that actually took a lot of time because it was descent on it.
You're thinking of Alan Turing Road?
That one, that was the one I think that brought the issue up. Then there's since been the road through Mount Sorrel. On either of them, there are not large numbers that would make a considerable difference. But this was actually looking to see how many, what the arrangements are for making sure that when there are new developments, they're being put into the correct council tax for preset purposes, as well as the election side for voting electoral register purposes.
That sounds like that would mean a change to the Woodhouse boundary.
No, it's not been changed. There's three areas involved: the street naming and planning. Who, when the development's going to do the street naming, they use the access road as the locality or the parish. So it's, even if your house might be just over, it's actually very few where anything actually straddles any boundaries, majority are in one or the other. And they pass that information on to council tax as the parish locality, who then raise the council tax.
Because in terms of election, that would affect the borough council ward, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, yeah.
So you'd be pulling houses that's at the end of the lane and is just in.
Might be just in Wood or Rothley or Mount Sorrel, maybe.
But the decision you're making would also affect which ward it was in, wouldn't it?
It would.
It seems totally illogical that just the one house at the end of the lane in the other ward just sits the other side of the brook.
I think on the maps it's fairly obvious, but I think unfortunately Mount Sorrel's precepts have gone up to £190 from about 70 compared to Rothley's 58 or something, so that's a big number. I think next year it might be smaller, but obviously that's not in our control.
The last one's 27, looking at the non-domestic range. Being the court hired the monitoring of the Capita contract is overseen by the head of customer experience. Our Capita still there.
Thanks.
So how did that work out?
Capita.
Because they were in liquidation.
No,
Carillion.
We've got another 2 years of Capita.
Yeah,
was it 2 years? We've got another 2 years.
February 2020, yeah.
Oh, that's
February 2020.
Unless it's something I don't know, this can mean the news today.
I'll shut up quickly.
This is the coffee.
different kind of construction.
A lot of the major outsourcers have issued have had profitability issues. So Capita, Interserve, Serco have all had their various issues. But Carillion is a is obviously a much more extreme case.
Can I just ask on the question of these write-offs that weren't in accordance with financial procedure rules? Do Capita actually have a copy of the financial procedure rules?
They would have, wouldn't they?
The it falls down on me and Carey, that one. So I think it was the customer practice had been the head of service had written them off, but when we actually examined them, and sometimes the head of service had written them off or done the write-offs, and sometimes I had, but when we looked at the precise rule, it was actually it needs to be me as section 151 officer.
I understand there's a step.
So really all it means is that I just make sure I sign off all the larger ones now. So it's you know, they were being authorised and looked at, but in some cases they weren't authorised by someone at the correct level. So there's no, you know, you're looking at them in retrospect. There's no issue or risk or anything that's been written off that shouldn't have been. But we just clearly need to follow our own rules going forward.
That's right. If you set the rules, then you need to.
It's an error.
I think there's a lot on 1 report, isn't there? All their values and one person signed
it. Yeah.
Okay. Right, we're asked to note this report. It's got the agreement with everyone here?
Yes.
Right, move on to item 11, the risk management register.
Use it.
Yeah, thank you for your attendance.
Thank you.
This is again the quarterly update on the risk register to the end of December. Any changes are in bold italics. There's no changes in anything on there other than updates to the few tractions planned for each risk. So on the strategic risk one, the document management system is progressing. Strategic risk two, there's a number of few tractions around the implementation and GDPR requirements which are on track at the moment.
So who is the strategic director of corporate services?
That's me.
We've just got one there that we've slipped a bit on the staff training, but that was being addressed in January, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And on the final one, the introduction of the SMTs, the MT call-out arrangements, is due to start next week, the week after, beginning of March. And then there's a further action in there around the burst or gas explosion, following the lessons learned from that.
I noticed on the first one from ASR1, one of the mitigating actions is periodic testing for business continuity arrangements, and also further down we've got review of team recovery plans with newly appointed heads of service ongoing as required. My question really is the periodic tests of continuity. We've got periodic tests, business continuity arrangements. The last one was September 2016. Are they really periodic?
There should have been the one that we were going to audit the outcome of, but it's been postponed until July, so that would have been the one.
Right, and slightly on the same grounds, a review of team recovery plans.
They're reviewed annually. They're part of the business continuity plan, so the individual team ones.
So when's that last been done?
They should be being done any time now.
Or is it due to be done? It's due, yeah.
It should be reviewed annually. Then when we get... We haven't had any new recent heads of service, but when we do have new heads of service, then we'll go through it with them as well.
So two things I've picked up, so mitigating actions, and it's just a point of confirmation that's still going on. IT is obviously a worry, but we're doing all we can. I think the telephone is outside now.
Sorry?
The telephone is now outside, are
they? Yeah, so that's now being the process, so yeah, so that's some cloud based capability we have.
So if this building became unusable and you went to somewhere in Melton or somewhere at the other end of town, can you take your telephone number with you?
You can now do that. Yeah. That functionality is in there. We've actually got a home working trial that's due to start in the next week or so, actually, before the end of this month.
So if you work from home on Friday, can you fire in your number where I end up at your home?
The telephone will ring. We've got the functionality to do that. Yeah. We're actually trialling. So that functionality is in there within the implementation we've got. So it's perfectly possible, but that's part of what we're doing with these home working pilots to test that out, and then we'll look to roll that out going forward with general staff training. So it's obviously there's the technology, but also the staff training as well. I guess if the building burnt down, then that level of staff training would probably take a certain level of priority.
Yeah,
but it is a capability we now have with a new system.
You've got a sort of computer box somewhere, have you, which the telephones work off, and then it goes.
I think it's via voice over IP now.
Yeah,
I think that's how it would work. I must confess, I don't know precisely the telephony, but you can. You could always divert your extension to your own.
Yeah, the point is the brain.
But you can now. I think it's a more sophisticated way.
The brains are off-site, or what here is wiring.
Yeah. So, no. We can. I believe that that's the case. I have to say, sort of the detail of the technology.
I've telephoned for this sort of thing started happening.
Yeah.
Are we confident that we are where we want to be with regard to GDPR compliance for May 25th?
I think we're okay. I think if you were to revisit this conversation, okay now, revisit this conversation in April, then so far so good, but there's quite a lot of work to do still. So it is a big task. The good news is we have someone whose full-time job it is, and we're plugged into the sort of the Leicestershire network of all councils trying to deliver this. So, I think we'll be okay. I think there may be some IT things. If you just ask me what wouldn't be done, there's probably some IT things that we wouldn't necessarily address, which all authorities are going to be in the same position on. So things like automatic deletion, or the ability to delete records that residents or customers may require of us. So this sort of the automatic deletion of records that we hold, that some of those IT things may be difficult because the systems on which those records are held weren't designed for the GDPR requirements. So that's
the ability to pull the data impact assessments. When a member of the public asks, it has to be presented in a particular format.
Yeah. Being realistic, there will be some of those issues we'll still have. One of the big things we've done, which I'm pleased with, is everyone's been trained now. So that's the key thing. So everyone in the council's been trained, apart from people who are on long-term sick or maternity leave. But basically, everyone's been done now, which is really good. We're working through the process of understanding all our data sets, understanding the owners and what's held there, and then for each of those individual data sets we need to produce privacy notices, etc. So we've got templates for that, but nonetheless it's a certain amount of work. So Megan, who's leading
people on this, are going to get inundated, everyone's going to get inundated as we get nearer to May, because everybody's going to be seeking updated statements. Not just councils, we're in the same boat.
Yeah, I won't pretend it's not challenging. So far in the plan, we're okay. You know, if you're in, 2 months' time, I wouldn't say there's no chance we could be behind. At the moment, it's sort of okay, but I think we just recognise that there are. Is the regulator
treating you differently than corporate? Or have you got more leniency than the corporate sector?
I should imagine we've got less leniency.
Less leniency. Because you'll have more sensitive data in here.
Yeah, there's sensitivity of data, and obviously with these things, the public sector are usually required to be exemplars of the implementation. So we'll get we're probably treated less sensitively than otherwise. I have to say I've not compared our requirements to the private sector. I'll guess, to be honest, they're probably pretty much the same, but we obviously do have more sensitive data, and in many ways we're more complex organisations, because we, you know, a bank at the end of the day is relatively few services, where we've got data and services for ASB in tenants, we've got the council tax, we've got our housing register, we've got people who, the planning system's got data, so we've got a lot of complexity in what is, for an organisation of our size compared to a comparable private sector organisation. So that's a big part of our challenge, really.
Could I possibly ask what GDPR plan stands for?
General Data Protection Regulations. May 25th.
By the same token, SMT and CMT.
Senior Management Team and Corporate Management Team.
Thank you.
We're done with this, are we?
I think so.
Can we note it? Yeah. Is that agreed?
Yeah.
And we'll move on to the council's use of regulatory and investigative powers.
We've not made any use. We've had one request from the police for CCTV data.
Okay.
We've not actually made any use of
that. So I think we can note that then, can we?
Was
that request granted?
Yes, it was the use of CCTV. I don't think it's a memorandum of understanding, is it? It's an arrangement between ourselves and the police, an agreement that they can request data from the use of CCTV.
I think on this we should note that this annual IT health check, which is the one that was deferred, is coming back to the next meeting, isn't it?
Yeah, the IT manager said it's definitely
going to
be ready by then.
Yeah. Could you just remind
him? Yeah, how are
you? Okay, thank you.
I mean, most of what's on the work programme is obviously, the quarterly reports that you get, the annual reports. It's just for you to obviously have an idea of what's coming up.
Okay. So the top of the page is for the next meeting, which is in June, isn't it?
Yeah. And the dates for the meetings for the rest of this year and next year are going to be agreed at the next full council meeting. So they're just draft at the moment. But obviously once they've been agreed, then I can programme all those in. So.
So
happy to
note
that one?
Yeah. Everybody agreed to note it?
Yeah. Yes. Can I just ask, is there somewhere in June where we can ask the question again of GDPR, because we are then post compliance?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's a relatively reasonably high risk area. Certainly the fines from the regulators, the fines, etc., are much higher. So it's to just see confidence that we are.
Yeah.
Find the right place in the agenda, the right report.
No, it's
if I put something in that we put
update on review. Update on GDPR.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Okay.
In that case, I'll close the meeting. Thank everyone for their attendance.
we should all say to everyone.